Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we've got a lot to get to, including the future of physical media versus digital. Christopher Nolan doesn't give a damn what you think. Our spoiler-free review of The Odyssey and so much more. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, Troy Heinrichs.
Hey, everybody.
Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
We're back. I haven't seen Amanda in a little bit, but how you been?
Actually, I've been sick for a long time. It seems like I don't get better, but I'm excited that we're going on a boat.
That's right. Whole Cruise is coming up next week, so we will have a compilation episode next week, just so you know. It won't be a new one, but maybe it might be new to you. I don't know. I don't care. I'll be on a cruise.
Exactly. We're not worried about it.
Nope. And you got some good news. Do you want to share your good news, by the way?
I got engaged in Hawaii.
Wow. How many vacations do you need? I mean,
they just so happen to be right back in back to back. But
it's just so happened. There are people here going, man, I can't even go to Wisconsin for a day.
I know.
Two back to back.
Very blessed. I'm very fortunate. I know that. I will say, if it makes anybody feel better, though, at least I was sick almost the entire vacation in Hawaii, if that makes you feel better about me going on vacation.
That would be a terrible person if they do. If you do feel that way, you're a terrible person.
I mean, I'm just saying, if it makes up for the fact that I'm a little blessed in 2026.
Also, how cool to go to State 49 and State 50 in the same year.
Oh, it is cool. I've never been to Alaska, so I'm really excited to see it.
I've been there. This will be my fourth time. I think I should have my own house there by now. I wish I made that kind of money.
Honestly, maybe just get a property and turn it into an Airbnb.
Oh, that would be sweet. That would be
and then pay all the taxes that they start charging you now because of that situation, because too many people are buying up residential areas to turn them into B&Bs.
Yeah.
And in Alaska, you can only use it like 4 months out of the year. The rest of the time, it's freaking cold. Nobody's going to go up there. But anyway, so let's talk some movies and TV. Let's move on. Good for you. Congratulations. I hope your marriage works out and you're not divorced in a couple of years. How's that?
Okay. Jesus Christ.
That's how you get to it.
Aaron's gonna be divorced from me because he didn't ask me how I was doing.
I asked you last week. She wasn't here last week, jackass. The world doesn't revolve around you. All right.
It doesn't matter. It's the bromance.
How are you doing, Troy? Are you doing okay?
I'm sick. Also,
are you sick?
And tired of your bullshit.
Oh my god. Enough. Anyway, speaking of divorces, Tom Cruise. Did you see?
What the hell was that?
What kind of transition is this?
It's terrible.
This is god awful.
He's been divorced. It counts.
Okay.
Anyway,
he's going to be divorced from Hollywood after this movie.
A better segue would have even been about how Amanda is actually present for us to talk about Tom Cruise acting.
Once again, doesn't revolve around you. It just happens to be a good coincidence that you're here. How about that? But yes, it is a happy coincidence because you have notoriously said you are not a Tom Cruise fan, even though you acknowledge he's a great stuntman.
He is a great stuntman. He's not the best actor. You know,
but his new
does
trailer,
not dig Tom Cruise at all.
If his new trailer for Dick, can I tell the people what this is for one second?
Tell them.
Jesus. Tom Cruise finally released the trailer for his new movie, Digger, which has been touted for quite some time, where he's basically playing an oil man who's got an ecological disaster to deal with before it destroys the world, and he might just be the only guy who can save it. Now, this is the first time I would argue that he's really acted where he doesn't look like Tom Cruise in a long time, probably since Tropic Thunder.
This is what Tom Cruise would look like if he actually aged and wasn't in a vampire cult.
Which is true. Because the makeup job and the hair job look terrible.
It's insane. It's wild.
You don't like it?
No, I do not.
Well, hang on. So I mean, it looks like he would look if he didn't have his hair colored and probably had plugs and probably didn't get a face lift or whatever else he's doing.
And no doing- cosmetic surgery has ever looked that good. He is selling his soul to somebody for his skincare routine.
All right. So you guys, let's talk about Digger, though, because I know it's been out for a little bit, but this is the first time we've had a chance to talk about it since the last episode. And I'm just curious, what did you guys think? Because this has been talked about for a long time. And this is from the director of The Revenant and Birdman. I'm just, this is Tom Cruise swinging for his acting Oscar. He got an icon Oscar, which is not the same as an actual acting Oscar. And I think he's trying to get one with this role. It's very comedic. He's going for it. He's swinging for the fences. You guys don't think it works at all? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, what I saw was basically him yelling at a guy over a computer screen about the oil rig, and he wanted to shut the oil rig down. And then the oil rig, he's like, "You're not shutting my oil rig down," and blah, blah, blah. And it was just like back and forth. And that's all I saw of the, you know, movie. And I'm just like, what is this? Am I watching like War of the Worlds, but like only half of it?
Did you not watch the whole trailer? It's like 2.5 minutes of the plot.
No, I got bored. I skipped and went next.
TikTok, okay.
All right, then back to Amanda then.
I will say, I can understand the feeling, the sentiment that he had during watching it, because as much as I like, it's Alejandro Iñárritu, I don't know how to say his name properly, but as the director, interesting, like he's had really good work before, so maybe it'll be something a little obscure and weird and whatever. Let's go for it. And then I start watching the trailer and I'm like, what the hell is this movie about? I feel like it's really made just to give Tom Cruise something weird to do. He's doing his best Nicolas Cage is how I felt watching the trailer.
That's, yeah.
Isn't it though?
In a bad Nicolas Cage movie.
Yes.
I disagree. Like, stop saying you didn't. Okay. Number one, if you didn't finish it, you can't have an opinion anymore. You can't. You can't say I didn't finish it and then have a full opinion.
I had enough of opinion that I didn't like the way it was. I didn't like the way it looked. I didn't like the way he acted. I didn't like the way it sounded. I was just like, this is weird now.
I thought it looked interesting. It looked very interesting. I'm not saying it's going to be good, but I think it looks interesting. I'll put it that way. The way he's stroking his weird cat. He's got a cat in the trailer that is constantly, I think, dead. I think dead. And at one point where he's talking about the cat to his vet, like, how long does the cat have to live? Between 2 weeks and 5 minutes. And I thought that was a pretty good joke. And then at the end, you get the cat basically like just, there's Tom Cruise with the cat doing a physical comedy joke. I thought was pretty funny. John Goodman as the president, who's barely alive, is pretty hilarious. I do think it feels kind of topical and political in some respects in terms of what they're doing. But I like when a movie is willing to swing for the fences. And I agree, Amanda, there is a little bit of just give Tom Cruise something weird to do, because I do think he's trying to come for an Oscar. I think he wants to be recognized as an actor, and he's tired of the stuntman references that people like you make.
Well, and it is a satirical movie, so it's defined as being more of this comedy bombastic mission they're going on, and it's supposed to be funny. So I feel like Tom Cruise is appropriately leaning into whatever this weird ass character is. And I gotta be honest, and I think it's hilarious that I'm the one saying this between me and Troy. I think he seems fun and entertaining, and it does feel different and new for him. So it feels like he is actually expanding his artistic realm.
All I know is I gotta get Aaron on his boat really quickly because he needs a vacation, because he likes a bit with a cat.
I mean,
there's something wrong. There's something wrong with Aaron if he likes.
It's because
a cat.
It's a joke about the cat's lifespan, and he doesn't really want him to have one.
Yeah, there you go. See, she gets me.
it's a reflection on Tom Cruise's lifespan.
No, it's not. I think the makeup looks pretty solid. Here's the thing with Tom Cruise: it's almost impossible to separate him from whatever character he's playing because he's so synonymous with himself. He is just like everywhere he goes, he's Tom Cruise. It's very difficult. Even when he was in Born on the 4th of July, which I think is a fantastic performance, it was hard to not see him as Tom Cruise in certain lights, because he's one of the most recognizable actors in Hollywood. He has a very distinct voice. He has a very distinct look. But I think he is trying very hard to separate himself and actually put himself out there. I mean, you can say what you want. You watch this trailer, he is putting himself out there.
His traditional Tom Cruise. And I also, one of the things you said was how he, you know, changing everything about him, including his looks. He does not even look like Tom Cruise. Part of his recognizability as an individual, a human being, is the fact that he has not aged or changed physically in his entire, like, last 30 years. So for him to be unrecognizable in this role physically, the way he's acting, the way he sounds, everything is different. So he is at least challenging himself, and they're doing it in a fun way. I really feel like he's trying to, I don't know if he's inspired by Nick Cage, but just kind of that extremism with his acting. It's the same feeling that I get from a Nick Cage thing.
It feels very Tropic Thunder in a lot of respects. Like the swing that
that's a good comparison. Yeah.
It does. I mean, his performance there. I don't think it'll be nearly as good as Tropic Thunder because, like I said, I think they're trying. It seems very topical to where, you know, there are elements where I'm like, oh, are they trying to emulate Trump? And I don't want my politics in here if you're trying to really have fun, because it's very hard to get out of the political mindset
these days.
There's nothing
fun about politics anymore.
There's
either.
Nothing fun about politics. Skewing politics anymore is not funny. There's zero chance people of either side are going to find humor in that. So I really hope that's just a coincidence. But there's definitely some little bits and a couple jokes that I thought, okay, well, that's funny. Okay, especially with the cat. And yeah, maybe it's because I don't like cats. I don't know. I don't wish them ill. I just don't want one. Okay, I might wish someone.
I think there's a part of you that wishes them ill. Let's be honest.
Some of them.
Let's be honest.
It depends on how they look at me, you know?
I mean.
Yeah.
You just want them to get to their 10th life. That's all.
Sure. Sure. That's nice. Well, speaking of cats, let's segue, right? There's a better one. Is that better? Is that a better segue?
Terrible. This is an awful segue.
Well, now it is. God damn it. Well, Backrooms, if you didn't know, was an internet IP.
It kind of works.
Spawn from Creepypasta and that sort of thing. And now studios are trying to buy up internet IP left and right because they're trying to find the next big thing. Siren Head was recently just bought up, and now Cartoon Cat was bought up by Sony because they're trying to find something else that'll pop in the zeitgeist. That's what they're trying to do. And I'm curious, it's hard to predict these things. We don't know, right? Because I had no idea Backrooms was that popular that it would lead to a $200 million plus movie gross. But what do you think about this situation where studios are buying up internet IP and trying to recreate the Backrooms experience?
I mean, I feel like we're just a little bit lagging. I'm surprised we didn't see this sooner, is really how I feel about it. The entire, I don't know, status of how people find information, what they engage in terms of content, is very YouTube based. Like, we even recognize as an audio only podcast, we miss out on a large portion of potential audience members because we're not on video.
Yeah, it grows every single year, right? It gets harder and harder to compete if you don't have video. Yeah.
And it's partly because that's, you know, just been the way things have adopted through the evolution of YouTube and all of these different social media channels and TikTok and short videos and reels and all of that sort of thing. So you have different editing as well. But I think that's where people are really attached to their content creators online and the content that they come up with. And it also, one, it gives you more expansion of independent ideas and those indie potential filmmakers and content that we can pull from. But it also, I think, is giving us something different, right? I think we're going to start to evolve from the remake trilogy sequel trend into more of an original independent thought and filmmaking process.
I mean, really, this feels very similar to 80s and 90s or whatever, when they bought up video games, you know, they're buying video game properties, trying to crank those out, Mortal Kombat and stuff like that. And it feels like they're not taking the time to understand what makes them popular. I think Backrooms is an exception because they actually hired the filmmaker behind it to direct it. I think that Kane Parsons he knew what his audience wanted. I'm hoping that the studios have learned that lesson, because it seems like that's the lesson they never learn. They just buy up the property, buy up the IP, and then they do something completely different with it. Like, completely different.
and don't have fans. There are people that like respect the originality of the, you know, source material behind it. They just put whoever they can for, you know, oh, this is a good director, this is a good writer, let's put them together
to rush
something
out
of this.
Yeah. To launch it out the door. I mean, it's interesting. I don't, and the sad part is this is how removed we are. I would say none of us know these properties. I mean, I looked into it for the podcast, but I would not say that we are very familiar with them because we're not the target demo. Maybe Amanda, she's closer to the target demographic than Troy.
I'm closer, but I missed that. I've realized because I have so many friends that they make all these references to these sorts of things. And I'm like, I have no idea what joke you're saying. And they're like, have you never been on YouTube? And I'm like, I barely use YouTube. I have to check and see if I'm even signed into my account right now. I'm just a little bit of a grandma in that way, I guess. So I'm not even hip with it.
Yeah, it's not like you can search this stuff out. I think what happens is the algorithm on YouTube, they just have YouTube on. They've watched something that's part of their algorithm, and then it's the continuous play feature. And then something just happens to pop up that's like, oh, this is catchy. Because I don't go to YouTube to look for random stuff like that on the internet. I go to find roller coaster videos, or I go to look for Lego videos or Nintendo updates or whatever, things that are actually like in my thing. But if I let it roll to the next video, I'm probably going to get something that I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And then I get sucked in, and then you find one of those weird things like The Back Rooms or Duck Walked Up to the Lemonade Stand, which that is a horror movie or slasher movie would be completely amazing. Charlie the Unicorn comes to mind. Like a live action Charlie the Unicorn would be freaking hysterical. I think that would be amazing too. Lots of great content out there.
The algorithm hell is a real thing, man. It was just yesterday or the day before. I don't know why I came across I don't watch reality TV. I just don't. And they're ever. I don't watch competition shows. I don't watch Survive. I just don't watch reality. And for some reason, this young girl, Nene Royals, America's Got Talent, audition or whatever came across my screen, and I watched it. And I thought she was a freaking rock star. Like, wow, what a great performance. And then all of a sudden, my entire algorithm was going down this rabbit hole of all of her. Like, every time I flip, there's a new Nene Royale video from something else that she did. I'm like, okay, this is getting weird. And I watched one video, and yeah, I really liked her. But I'm like, oh, this kid's a rock star. Good for her. I hope she crushes it. You know, let her win. But I didn't expect to have like 400 videos in a row of, you know, this kid in this audition, and then thoughts on this audition. I don't understand that. Like, I have my own thoughts. I don't need to see some YouTube comment or tell me what their thoughts are. I don't care what your thoughts are.
See, but that's where you're not. That's where you're not connected with the current. The current day is really reaction videos. They're huge.
I don't get it. Explain it to me. I don't get it.
Because it's almost like you're having a conversation, or at least getting to hear different people's perspectives. And I will give credit. Some of these individuals who do reaction videos are very well versed in whatever it is, and they have some new piece of information or education or different perspective that you're not seeing elsewhere. And then also sometimes it's just the personality of those people that you become engaged and connected with, like for no reason at all. I don't care about quote unquote influencers really, but there are some people that I follow on social media and it's literally just them going about their lives. And I'm like, oh, I love this couple so much. Let me watch their videos. Why do I care? I don't know, but I do.
Sounds like a bunch of dorks 20 years ago that were like, yeah, you know, we don't like Entertainment Weekly and Variety and Deadline, so let's just do our own thing.
Yeah, that's true. It does sound like a podcast.
It is. We're giving our opinions, and we're like, why do you care what we think?
I understand the hypocrisy behind it, okay? But I'm just like, well, I don't want to
acknowledge it.
I am acknowledging it. I am.
It's the video thing. Like, the video thing makes me have to look at my screen, and then I can't do something else.
Exactly. That's the part that I'm like, well, if I'm going to watch it, I would rather watch it instead of being constantly interrupted by somebody who's constantly pausing it, which I can't stand. I can't handle being paused in the middle of something that, let me tell you about this element where she strings the guitar. Well, easy, killer. Just freaking let me hear her play. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just very, very, I can't, it's my OCD. Maybe that's my problem. And I get it, because it's very much, now that you put it in that perspective, Amanda and Troy, I can see it very much like this is just like TV accompaniment podcasts like we used to do, right? Like Blacklist and Westworld, same kind of thing. And yeah, okay, fair enough. I'm the old guy. I acknowledge it. I'm just old. I just took a stress test. I'm definitely old.
But you passed it.
I did. I did.
That's the most important part. Our host is not going to die this year from heart failure.
I am not going to die. I had to run shirtless with a bunch of connecting wires up to me. And watching these women look at me sadly, you know, like, oh.
They're like, we're embarrassed for you.
Yeah. My favorite part is when the young woman said, you did great for your age. Like, what the hell does that mean?
Wow.
You couldn't just like leave with the, you did great. You can't, you gotta, I don't know what that means. But at that point, I would have taken the heart attack, if I'm being honest. I'm like, I think I'll take a heart attack. Just take me out. I'm done. I'll do a Fred Sanford right now. Elizabeth, this is the big one.
So now there's a whole YouTube series right there about going and taking stress tests, but don't give them your birth date and then have them guess your age after you're done with the stress test.
There probably is. There's a YouTube series for everything. And it'll probably, now it's going to pop up on my phone, of course. So I'm going to
probably
live through that. But you know what? It'll be better than this Nene Royal algorithm.
I'm already getting Nene Royal on my reels right now as I'm scrolling up.
Hey, you know what? In all honesty, the kid was great. Like, you ever watch America's Got Talent? I don't watch it, but they have this golden buzzer thing, which is supposed to be if somebody should just shoot right to the finals because they're awesome. This girl got the whole freaking stadium on their feet for this song. She has 2 minutes and she crushed it.
Wow.
And they don't give her the golden buzzer for that. And I'm like, if you don't get it for that, what do you get it for? Like, what? What? That's why I can't stand reality TV.
It is very subjective, and you're like, how? Where is this coming from?
I don't get it. And what's funny is if you, America's Got Talent didn't air it, but if you go find, like, there's tons of videos from people that were there that film it and stuff, and they were screaming, like, golden buzzer, golden buzzer, golden buzzer. Like, the whole audience is screaming for her, and nothing. So I'm just like, this thing's rigged. I can't stand it. It drives me nuts. Sorry for the tangent, but there you go. Also, this is what caused me to have a stress test. This kind of frustration with the algorithms.
Don't blame the algorithms for your age.
No.
But at the same time, we appreciate the algorithms and we appreciate the YouTubes of the world because we can see the things that we used to watch, but in much more condensed versions.
I did.
Which I like.
I did tell Amanda this. I don't care. I can put it on a podcast. I don't care. But there are three lovely women. They were very lovely people. And I told Amanda, I'm like, it's very hard to run with your shirt off and your stomach sucked in at the same time.
You're so, like, I'm just trying to prove to myself I'm still worth something.
I still got it a little bit. Nope.
Still trying to prove that I don't need a diaphragm to breathe.
I'm like, I can do it, but my God, this is painful. All right. Well, moving on. We'll see more about the IP as we go on. I'm sorry we went off on a little tangent there, but what are you going to do? Speaking of tangents, I got a tangent. Okay, so I'm watching Cape Fear on Apple. I've talked about this before, and I'm not recommending it anymore. I'm not.
Oh, shit.
I'm not. I'm still watching it, and I'm going to finish it out, and I want to know if this has ever happened to you. So, okay, this has Javier Bardem, he's fantastic as the bad guy. You have Amy Adams, Patrick Wilson, like great cast. J. Edgar from Bosch is in there. I love J. Edgar from Bosch. I'm sorry, I can't remember the actor's name off the top of my head. But so I'm watching this and I really, really.
Great original property.
Yeah, sure. I love the first two movies and I kind of liked where it started, but now it's been getting like every episode is worse than a soap opera. Like the characters, the kids are so stupid. Like, they make the worst decisions over and over and over. They could literally see this guy, Max Cady, who's played by Javier Bardem, who's the bad guy. They could see him stab somebody in the face, and they'd still go for a ride with the guy. Like, they're just that stupid. And the mom and dad, who are Amy Adams and Patrick Wilson, they're that stupid. Like, they make bad decision after bad decision after bad decision, almost like they're trying to justify having 10 episodes so that they can stretch this thing out. And every episode they're trying to make it seem like, well, this makes sense. It doesn't. None of it ever makes sense. Like if you stop and think for 10 seconds, the writing is freaking terrible and I can't stop watching it. I can't.
That's the worst part with those things is when you're like, this concept is so interesting and I want to see it through because I have to understand, where are you going with this? And it's almost like the completionist desire to understand, not because I need to finish something, because I have ADHD. Of course, I don't need to finish anything.
Atta girl.
But
quit it.
Unless you're hyper-focused, and then you will.
And then you will, yeah. But I'm having something similar with Based on a True Story. I started watching on Peacock.
Oh,
did
yeah.
Did you guys watch it?
I watched the first season. I know it came back for the second season, and I'm like, this story was done. I don't need more of this.
Yeah. Well, I haven't finished the first season, so I'm getting there. But as I go through these episodes, I'm having the same thing where I'm like, God, I'm so tired of these fake dream sequences and these bullshit decisions you guys keep making with a serial killer.
Yeah.
And you're like, why are people dying? Oh my God, this seems like a bad idea. Let's do it more. And every time I'm like, you guys are so moronic at this point, but I can't stop watching. And what's going to happen? So I do have a similar issue that I'm going through right now.
That's how I felt with Margo's Got Money Problems.
Oh, because you didn't like really? It and you had to finish it?
I didn't watch that one.
It was billed to me as a comedy. It's got all these great actors. I'm just excited. It's something different that Apple TV's been like shying away from. And it just became melodrama, after school special. I could predict every single move that was coming.
Bummer.
And I'm like, why am I still watching it? And I'm like, because I like Nick Offerman. Because I like Nicole Kidman's. Nicole Kidman's character in that was actually really fun. Michelle Pfeiffer is just over the top, and it's like, gosh, like, but I have to see, you know, do we get to a point where it is what's going to happen is going to happen, and it does happen in the very final shot, but man, it was just a slog.
It's one of those things where I feel bad for myself, you know. I'm watching it and I'm going, why am I doing this to myself? Like, if you think about it, I actually sat and had a epiphany, if you will.
Your conversation with yourself?
Kind of. I said, self, why are you doing this to yourself? Like, why
don't you love yourself enough?
I'm like, you're taking 10 hours of your life, which obviously, as we just explained, is not long.
Pretty limited. Right? Pretty limited these days.
And I'm on the back side. I'm on the back nine. You know what I mean? And I'm spending it watching idiots make idiotic decisions. Yeah. And not in the cool true crime way where you're like, I know they're going to get caught. It's just like, wait, how are they still not all in jail? How are they not all dead? How have they not caught this? It took them this long to figure out he was doing this thing. Like, how stupid are they? And then the sad part is when you realize how stupid they are and how long they've been this stupid, and you realize you're still watching it. Like, they're doing exactly what they set out to do, which is get you back next week. And it's working. And it's not a
binge.
Do you
think people are actually this dumb, and that's why they're showing us people that are actually this dumb? And no, maybe we didn't realize the IQ levels as an average have dropped dramatically low?
I mean,
maybe that's the issue.
If there are people this dumb, they all deserve to be in jail. And I'm okay if this entire Bowden family dies at the end at this point. Like, if they kill the whole family, I think I'd be all right. Because they all deserve it. They're all idiots. They're stupid. I don't care whatever the secret ends up being. Like, there's a bunch of secrets, blah, 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 blah. You can have all the reveals you want. Nothing is going to justify the stupidity that I've observed. And then, shame on me for watching and continuing to get to the end of it. And I know I've done this before. That's the problem. Like, we've all done this with some show at some point.
And, still are.
Oh, yeah, you still are. You still do it on that one show that shall remain nameless.
Nameless.
Hayes Banatomy. So it's just
awkward. Like, I just started trying to catch up today.
Oh, I'm just, it's just, why do we punish ourselves? That's all I'm asking. Why do we punish ourselves?
I really do want to understand the psychology more of why we can't just quit it.
I mean,
even if we're like, I don't want to be doing this, but I do.
You have a degree in psychology. You'd think that you would understand that.
I don't have the confirmed facts, though. I haven't dived into the studies and the research.
Okay.
On this specific topic. I probably should have.
You should have.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just had to vent. Thanks for hearing me out.
You're welcome.
And understanding how stupid I feel.
We care about your opinions, unlike the next person we're going to talk about.
Yeah, well, this guy doesn't care about any of you. none of your opinions. None of you. As long as you go see his movie, he's good. And if you don't go see his movie, he's good. So Christopher Nolan, he heard the discourse over the Odyssey, right? They have American accents. It's Greek mythology. The dialogue is also kind of written American. We haven't seen it, right? Well, we have. We'll review it a little later. But the casting of Elliot Page, who's not playing Achilles, he's playing Sinon. But still, I mean, there's some concern about that. Well, you've got a trans person in the movie. So people are outraged about that. I do not have an opinion about it. I'm not getting into that fight. And also Lupita Nyong'o, who's Helen of Troy. And there's a lot of people that are frustrated about that because they say, well, Diane Kruger played her. It should be a beautiful blonde and blah, 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 blah. And so there was all that. Man, it's Greek mythology. Let's see what the guy has and then make a decision. That's neither here nor there. About the controversies or what the internet determined was the controversies. In an interview with The Telegraph, Nolan was asked about these controversies and he responded very directly, comes with the territory. But look, these conversations that happen before people see the film, they're always irrelevant because no one having them knows what the film actually is yet. And then he goes on, I spent 10 years of my life dealing with Batman. When I came on to Batman Begins, writers and artists have been working on this beloved character for almost 65 years, and a lot of freighted thoughts were out there about what he represents. And what I learned over my time on that trilogy is you can't worry about any of that at all. What you have to do is honor the original text by interpreting it the strongest way you personally can. So that all to say, do fans ever wait until something comes out to bitch about it? Or do we just have to be angry?
No, we need YouTube content to watch. So they have to get out there and say stuff.
Facts.
Well, I would love to say that he is overreacting, right? But I put this exact, what I just said, as a post on Facebook, and it blew up. And my God, if you read the comments, it would frighten you at how some people think.
What's the general consensus from the post?
Well, the Helen of Troy situation, because she's black, she shouldn't be Helen of Troy.
Wow.
Yeah, the face that launched 1,000 ships. I would argue Lupita Nyong'o is a beautiful woman.
She's, yes, yeah. Please, give us her.
Elliot Page, because Elliot Page is a trans man, so there's that. A lot of people are angry about that. So I can't tell you how many just really, I mean, I think you can kind of guess the
comments. No, I see where it's going.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all the people that don't understand that the real human being isn't the act. Character
is
a character.
This is also Greek mythology.
It's also mythology. It's not like,
and
it's,
even you know, if you're changing figures, even if you're changing figures and you're changing who they are, why? What is it hurting? What is it hurting for someone to have a different idea or a different take? Or hey, since none of this is like confirmed to be freaking real, their own perception of what might be reality. How do you know? Who are you to tell me that? There wasn't a beautiful black Lupita Nyong'o as Helena Troy. You don't know that for a fact.
You weren't. Did you take a photograph?
Yeah. You tell him, Troy.
It's mythology, so it wouldn't matter if they were there. It wasn't real. That's all I'm saying. I mean, it's a movie, too. Also not real.
You mean we're not allowed to have ideas about ideas? That's crazy.
We're okay with Matt Damon. Matt Damon. You know, and basically talking just like he's in The Martian. Like, there's no effort to sound any different. And I just, these arguments are getting old to the point where you're losing my interest in these arguments. And I mean, and they continue like on just about every front, like these continuous arguments. Andy Serkis just had to deal with this for his what is Lord of the Rings movie he's doing? Hunt for Gollum movie. So he's doing the Hunt for Gollum and he was getting attacked for a lack of diversity in the movie. And he came out and actually came at it directly. He said, Tolkien. Thank you. Tolkien. I'm just going to say it 10 different ways. Himself was influenced by a lot of Norse mythology. There's a lot of that feeling. The Shire feels very, very much like a very, very white, you know, they're not very concerned about what goes on beyond the borders of the Shire, but you know, they don't want people coming in. So yes, there have been criticisms. This particular film is somewhat acknowledging that. But we don't think we will be doing a politically correct just casting for the sake of casting and ticking boxes version of the film. So it's only we're relevant, basically. So, you know, he's basically coming out and saying, hey, I'm not going to deal with that. Here's why. And the one thing that I will say, like, people just never seem to understand. Like, there's so many people. There are so many more people behind scenes. There's diversity all over in Hollywood sets. They actually have requirements for you even qualify for Best Picture, which I don't necessarily agree with, but it is what it is. And I get tired of this being the discourse before movies even come out. I think that's fully what my point is. The movie, you haven't seen it. Almost everybody complaining hasn't seen it, unless they happen to go to the premiere, but they still want to complain about it and say how terrible it is, about a movie about Greek mythology from one of our greatest directors, a guy who made the best Batman film ever made. And you still won't give him the benefit of the doubt. Instead, they want to tear the movie down just to have something to tear down. And I don't understand.
That's why movies of 80s and 90s were the best, because the internet did not exist.
One thing that I do want to say that I'm more than okay with is having more pressure on diversity and inclusion and those efforts. What I don't align with is these extremism approaches and I guess input of intention when someone is just making something how they're wanting to make it, how they envision it, and whether someone is involved or not in their trans or they're black or they're white or whatever that looks like, why do we take it so personally, like a personal piece of it, and not just say, yeah, we want to appreciate and recognize diversity and inclusion, and that be a positive piece of it?
I think a lot of it is trolling. I would rather have the conversation as, why does this bother you? Legitimately. I think discourse is very important. Why does this bother you? If you don't want to see it, or if it doesn't reflect anything you want to see, then just don't go see the movie. But if you haven't seen it, I'm a big advocate. If you haven't seen it, you don't have an opinion.
And that's, I think, really where Nolan is coming from, too, is if you've seen it, by all means, have your opinion. It is, you know, it is what it is. But if you haven't seen it, who are you to make an opinion that can make or break the success of something when you haven't even given it an opportunity?
And
a great example would be M. Night Shyamalan, even though we don't talk about this movie because the movie's terrible. But his version of The Last Airbender, he got so much grief because of the fact that he cast all white people instead of putting Asian people in the movie, because it's, you know, Asian culture. But it's like all of that noise happened before the movie ever came out. Once the movie came out, then you can say, like, yeah, it was really distracting watching white people do Asian culture things. Like, there should have been Asians in this movie. You can have that conversation after you see the movie, because you don't know. Maybe they use a bunch of stuff.
Maybe it doesn't.
Maybe. Yeah, you have to judge the quality of the content after you see the content.
And I just wish we would. And I think, honestly, Troy, I think you kind of have a point. Like, maybe that's why the 80s seems so magical, because we didn't have the internet. Because we didn't have that discourse.
All you had was a 90-second trailer. And if you got a 90-second trailer, maybe it was a 60-second trailer, because it was a commercial on, you know, Thursday night must-see TV.
I do miss that.
Do you remember when we had teasers that ended with just a small tease?
Mm-hmm.
And then you actually had a trailer that didn't tell you the whole movie? That was crazy.
Can you imagine? One of my favorite movies of all time is Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So if that came out today, and you've got this 45-year-old man running around with this little Asian kid that they never explain where he came from.
Well, when you put it like that.
I'm just saying, there's a lot to discuss there. You know what I mean?
after he goes evil with a bunch of other Asian kids that they're putting slave labor in a temple underground.
I'm just saying, there's a lot there. There's a lot there. And we never find out anything about his parents. Like, it really does seem a little bit like trafficking, right? Like, when you look back on it, like, Indiana Jones was a trafficker. And I don't know why we can't talk about that.
It would have been a whole thread on Reddit.
Well, they would have destroyed it.
And they would have said that before the movie was even seen.
They would have destroyed it. Maybe it's such a blessing we didn't have the internet then, so I could enjoy that movie for what it was.
The irony of us
reacting to it,
of us reiterating how much, you know, life was better before the internet, is we do internet talking and we give people our opinions, and so we're part of the problem.
Oh, there's people that already turn this off just because I even brought the topic up because we're mad about something. And I'm legitimately not trying to throw names. I'm really not slinging name calling around or anything like that. Like, you have whatever opinion you want. It's fine. I just don't know why we need it all over the internet all the time. Like, why do we have to have vitriol? Can we just go see the thing and make our own call? And then afterwards, say what you want. And at least you have an informed opinion. But like these crazy opinions before you even see anything. And it's based on something that's not even real. It's based on a poem. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. I mean, there's monsters in there. Nobody's mad that Medusa's going to be in this thing. It's weird.
No, we love Medusa.
She had grass snakes instead of cobras. There were cobras. There were definitely cobras.
They were definitely.
So why do people need to be so, you know? Yeah. Why?
So people-y.
Man, people. Hey, if you want to support us, you can go to Patreon where fans support their favorite podcasts. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. You can hear an ad-free version of The Hollywood Outsider where the timestamps actually make sense. All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic. So we are just going to talk a little bit about what's going on with physical media. And what I mean by that is, so Sony PlayStation announced that beginning in January 2028, they were ceasing releasing physical discs, and Xbox quickly followed suit. And you're probably like, why do we care about video games? We don't care about video games, man. We don't care. We're here for movies and TV, and I get it. But if you pay attention, consoles are often, very often, the leader of what's coming, if you pay attention to it. Blu-ray players started with consoles. 4K started with consoles, or at least that's when they really caught prominence. And that, you know, attributes to our collecting and our physical media collections. And I would argue we're about to lose physical media, because if they're going away from it on consoles, you already see how expensive Blu-ray players and 4K players are becoming because they're not being purchased as often. And, you know, you see companies like Best Buy no longer sell movies in their stores. Physical media is going away. It's going straight to digital, which is a big difference. I mean, I know some of you may think, well, I can buy it on digital. You don't really own it on digital. That's the difference. You don't own it. You don't. Well,
here, some people learn that the hard way.
Yeah, I'm going to take this we have to break this into two topics, I think, is really what down to.
I thought I was host. Go ahead.
We do, because like, there's a difference between, do I want my physical hard copies or a digital version, versus the pros and cons of digital itself.
I think it's the same thing. Do you want to own it, or are you okay with digital?
He's saying, if in a perfect world, if I didn't have to lose it, how would I feel, versus reality where I know that there's no certainty that I can watch this thing again for the rest of my life.
The major problem is the fact that we don't have laws that govern digital releases, and the fact that we use terms like buy and rent in a digital platform, like we would talk about I buy a car, or I lease a car, or I get an Uber and rent a car for a little bit of time. We have these terminologies that we have synonymous with other purchase transactions in our lives, that I think what we need to do is push Congress to make better laws around what digital medium is. So that when I go to Apple and I say, buy this movie, you're not buying the movie. You're leasing the movie
while we decide we still have it.
Exactly. So
explain that, because there are a lot of people that don't understand how that works. And you're Mr. Details.
So when you buy something, when you rent something, it's very much like you would think about renting it. Like, I have 2 days to watch it or 5 days to watch it, and I have to take it back to the store. That's the same concept. You rent it on iTunes or Amazon. You got 48 hours to watch it. After 48 hours, it disappears. The buy side, you're not buying the actual thing. You're buying the right to stream that piece of digital content for as long as the service is either around, the company owns the rights to stream the actual property, because it might be owned by Warner Brothers, or it might be owned by Paramount, played on Apple. Right. And they might have a war at some point, and all of a sudden everything goes away from Apple and it's only available on Amazon and Paramount. And so, like, you never really own the physical thing, which is why people are like, I want my physical media, because I have the thing. I can put it in the player. I know that it's mine and it's great. If we had laws that said, when I push buy in a digital store, that said, I now own that, that would be great, because then we could say, I could own it, I could download it, I could burn it onto a physical medium, I could store it on a hard drive.
Yeah.
Versus leasing it, which is what we're technically all been doing when we buy digital content. We're leasing it from the place that sold it to us.
It's true.
The language, to your point, I think makes a huge difference, because once you put it in those words and you're like, wait a second, when we think of buying something, we think, I get to keep this. You can't just take it from me. But when we buy a digital, the language is so different from what the actual terms and conditions are. And it's not clearly communicated that, hey, we can't guarantee we're even going to have this in 3 years. So just so you know, you might be able to buy it for however long we decide fit, or for as long as we decide to remain a company. And we are so used to purchases that are material where we can retain them. And I think that's why people like physical media, is because there is more guarantee and certainty. But here's the other part that I think about. Even with physical media, I have VHSs, but I don't have a VHS player anymore. So how am I going to watch that? I can't. I purchased it, but there's no guarantee that I can continue to utilize it. I think that's also just a current day aspect of entertainment media in general. But to Troy's point, having more regulations around how you communicate what it is, maybe firming up the usage and how that can be sustained more long term, and some of those pieces around it could make it where people do feel more confident in their purchase or their lease.
Well, and there's a big difference. I mean, when you talk about digital, I mean, you've got, again, like you said, companies might go out of business. Vudu has gone out of, you know, they're what, Fandango at Home now, and eventually they'll probably become something else. And yeah, most of your titles might have gone over with you, but that doesn't mean the next time they get sold, they're going to go with you. And at some point, most likely, they will be sold. And if you own something on Apple, it doesn't mean you can play it on the other platforms, and it, you know, da 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 da. Like, it just goes on and on. Not to mention, you need an internet connection. So if for some reason your internet goes down, you don't have access to your library anymore. You own physical media, you have access to it whenever you want. But you got to have a player, and you might not have to spend $500 for a freaking player by the time, you know.
Or $100 more on a game system because it came with the disk drive versus the one that didn't.
Yeah.
Right, which they're getting away from, so you won't even have that as an option anymore.
Correct.
It's a very frustrating component. And with digital in particular, it is just renting. You're always just renting. That, like you guys have already talked about, but I think that's an important part that people just forget. And I do think with all the content we have nowadays, people don't rewatch stuff like they used to. Understood. And when they do buy it on digital, and they'll just rewatch it on their digital library, which works great now, but in 5-10 years, that might not be there. At least with physical media, I still own all the videotapes I used to have. And I do have a VCR, before anyone asks. Not that I ever watch them, but I could. I could.
You know who I feel most empathetic for because of the impact that they have just inherently that's out of their control?
Okay.
Anybody in a rural area. Like all of our farmers ever who don't have access to high speed internet sometimes, or maybe just like there's an area where there's constant storms, so they don't have consistent connection, or you're in a more remote area in a cabin, and that's just the nature of your environment that you have to rely on something more physical that's not tied to the internet. I don't think there's a true realization about how pocketed access to internet and technology is in the United States. When you really start to dive into those more rural areas, which do make up a good chunk of our country, somehow, surprisingly, we still have areas without 14,000 homes that are 365% markup.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that, you realize how many people still don't have access to those things. And yes, they have limitations when it comes to their job and income and all of those different things. But also some of it is actually just down to internet and high speed internet. So even if I wanted to have, you know, this movie library, one, I have to have enough space to be able to download them or have access to the high speed internet, which neither one of those are really guaranteed.
That's an excellent
And here point. I thought she said that she should be feel the most sad for Gen X, because Gen X has basically bought all of these things on 8-track, CD, tape, VHS, Betamax,
right?
Laserdisc, CD, DVD, Blu-ray, 4K.
Oh, I've rebought everything, man.
Yes.
There's so many
that I've
rebought.
The amount of money I have spent
on for the exact same thing.
Just for the Goonies.
The amount of times I've purchased The Little Mermaid is ridiculous.
It's true, and it is a sucker's game, right? I mean, yeah, you get a lot in your streaming library. You have your Netflix, your Disney, your HBO Max, all of that too. You know, there's a lot of content there, but there's just something about I can put it on whenever I want. I like to have that availability. I mean, I own so much, and I own the entire collection of Psych on disc and digital. So I spend for both of them, and I watch it on Amazon Prime. So I realize none of this makes any sense. And I just feel like I'm just throwing money around.
Your bank account's like, what are you doing, Aaron?
What are you doing? But it's just like, I feel like I have to get it in every avenue possible. So I still have it.
Because of the certainty factor.
Yes, because I'm never certain.
Or the lack of certainty.
And this is a great example when Aaron said there's so much to watch, because like I wanted to watch Better Off Dead. I love Better Off Dead. I think it's a great movie. It's funnier than shit. And I couldn't watch it anywhere. It wasn't streaming anywhere. It wasn't available for purchase digitally.
Oh, that happened with a movie for me too. I cannot remember what it is right now. But it was like, I can't find this anywhere.
Not even like a YouTube
Does that even happen? And then you're like, not everything made it there.
And
not
then magically survived. It showed up on iTunes for purchase. And I was like, immediately buy.
And then iTunes takes it away from you in 3 years.
And then I watched it like immediately, like the next day. And now I don't have to watch it again for 20 years. And they got $10 from me.
Do you think they do that on purpose?
Maybe. It's like it's the old Disney Vault trick. They put it out. It's like, here's your two-week window to buy it, and then it goes away.
I've had this happen to me. One of my favorite movies is DOA with Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan. Don't judge me. It is. It's one of my favorite movies. You can't get it on digital anywhere. So I literally still have the DVD. I don't have a Blu-ray because I don't think it ever came out on Blu-ray. Otherwise, if I didn't have that, I'd never see it. One of my favorite shows, Vengeance Unlimited. It doesn't exist anywhere except my brother who, wink, wink, nod, nod, got it from the internet somewhere. That's the only way I have that show. Otherwise, I'd never be able to see it again because it doesn't exist. And I love that show. So it's just like, thank God for my brother. I'd never be able to see that again. You know what I mean? It's just very, very, it's exhausting.
The lesson I just learned from this is get to know someone and build a relationship closely, or have someone who owe you favors who's really good with IT.
My brother knows how to get around some things. That's all I'm saying.
You know?
That's
creative folks, you know? Keep them in your pocket.
Which is the full circle of that why we need different laws and different things going on, because of the DRM stuff. Like when you buy a physical disc, there's different rules that apply to that where you could make a backup copy if you wanted to for your own personal use. You can't do that with digital when it's DRM protected, and stripping the DRM is against the law.
That's so stupid.
It is so stupid. And one of the things that drives me so nuts is, so a lot of times if you buy physical media, especially nowadays, right, you get the Blu-ray, 4K, whatever, plus a digital code, plus a digital copy. But you don't own the digital code, the digital copy. So technically, even though you think you do, it's just a license. It's just a rental. It's just a Blockbuster Video until it eventually goes away or moves on, changes providers, anything else. I mean, I think speaking of Sony PlayStation, they just dumped... Like there were 500 digital titles, I think was the number, that they just completely stripped. People paid for them, bought them, everything else, and they just dumped them out of their libraries. You don't have access to them anymore. That's not right. That's not fair. People paid. At least I can say I own it. And the only way you take it is if you break into my house, please don't, and take my collection. Please don't.
Well, Westworld's a great example. Like you can't get Westworld anywhere because of the rights, right? It was too much money to keep owning the rights to air that particular show. Mm-hmm. So they said, we're not going to pay that fee anymore. So because they don't pay the fee anymore, you can't see it anywhere because Warner Brothers doesn't have its own platform.
I mean, it has HBO Max.
Maybe they will now.
Well, they have HBO Max, but there was just, for whatever reason, Warner Brothers does some weird stuff. They also wrote off Batgirl. And I'm like, how can you give a tax write-off? Like, why are taxpayers basically paying for your mistakes? I don't understand. That's some BS right there. That's
the law.
Be allowed to do that. And that's just,
one that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, you got that law, but you don't have a law that says, hey, if you paid for it, you actually own it. You can't just take it back. You have to give them an opportunity.
We don't
to
do
takesy backsies. Yeah.
All right.
I just. Well, hey, we've got a lot of listener thought or a few listener thoughts, so I'm going to discuss some of those. Okay. Kind of to get some different perspectives, because we put the topic in our Facebook group, of course, the Hollywood Outsider Facebook group. Peter George, and I just asked, like, you know, the topic revolves around the end of physical media. What are your pros and cons of the world moving completely to digital to you? And Peter George says, easier for companies to control who consumes their product. Entirely bad for the consumer. Pretty hard to borrow a game, movie, or any media from a friend to check out. Even worse for the few million in the U.S. alone that does not have internet or those relegated to dial-up.
What's up? That's my dude right there. You get it.
Absolutely. That whole borrowing thing is a real important part, because I do. I mean, I can't tell you how many times over the years I borrowed a game from Scotty, you know, former host, or borrowed, you know, or loaned movies to people. I constantly loan movies to people still. And it just.
But a lot of times they end up buying it because they liked it. So it's not like it's a true loss to the company. It could be word of mouth that gets other people to watch it and purchase it themselves, or, you know, start getting merch or different things like that. And I think they miss that there's still a return on sharing.
Wouldn't you
say,
though?
And also, don't we need more sharing here in the world?
Yeah, because that's what our corporate overlords love, is when you share everything.
Sharing is caring.
Which is why my internet idea is never ever going to take place. Because if I can deliver TV now over the internet, and I can deliver radio over the internet, what happened to the public airwaves? Let's make an outcry to say, hey, all that public airwave space for radios and TV, let's just turn it into internet. Ubiquitous internet everywhere for everybody.
Trish coming in with some interesting ideas and facts.
It's a different complete
structure.
You
have to figure out the protocol because of the spectrum and the structure and whatever. But like, That's available wireless internet for the entire United States, potentially, if you could get the protocol to work over it.
Interesting.
I'm not nerdy enough for that.
Yeah, I don't know enough. I don't know enough to speak to that. So I'm just gonna go with cool. How's that? Because I don't know.
Because I don't need the radio in my car to get radio anymore. I get radio over my cellular connection.
Well, I would say this too, like, you know, to Amanda, to your point, like, don't they know they're missing options? If they were profitable, you would still see physical media everywhere. The problem is that people stopped buying them because it became easier just to stream stuff at home. And people love,
which it is.
Easy.
I would rather just click a button and have it work than have to get up, get the thing, put it in, change it over.
Dude, I literally just said I own Psych in 3 or 4 different versions, and I still watch it on Prime because it's easier than. It's even easier than going to my digital library because Prime's so easy to access. You know, I mean, I get it. I do get it. I'm guilty of it. I get it.
It's not available when you're stuck at a car dealership waiting for them to fix your car. And you're like, I got an hour to watch an episode of this. So you watch an episode of that, you know?
All right. So I'm going to try and find some that we haven't talked about. But Reese Bennett, streaming can drop a series or a film from its site. Companies can decide your code is no longer valid. You can no longer truly own anything. It's only renting. We talked about that. It's terrible for consumers. I prefer tangible things. It's funny. I saw a YouTube vlogger that went to China, and they don't deal with cash there anymore. Everything is loaded on your phone, and that is how you do every transaction. In some ways, that seems convenient and quicker, but what if you have no signal or the network is out? I don't like the path everything being digital leads us to.
I do agree with that. There is so much risk. Like, we're just saying, here you go, government that we don't trust because you've proven you're not trustworthy ever in our entire existence. Here's all my money and assets. Mm. And you can take it from me at any time. Whatever you want.
Stuart Bannerman has a good point. This is pro for the studios. They kill much of the resale market. Just think about just the PlayStation and Xbox thing, that's putting GameStop out of business, period. Hard stop.
Oh,
they're out of business.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of resale market in terms of DVDs and Blu-rays and, you know, old collectibles, Disney films, things like that, too. He goes on to say they can dictate how much digital film, license to view, costs. They cut out physical media creation, packaging, and shipping costs. The cons, people like him will just buy less films. And we'll happily keep watching the hundreds of their favorite films on discs instead. Yeah, but then your favorite films never grow, you know, if you only watch physical ones. but
until your player dies because the motor burns up in it.
Yeah, I mean, I have a backup Blu-ray player just for that very purpose, just in case.
You have a tape rewind machine though, so you can save your VCR.
Oh my God.
We have pencils.
Okay. Lastly, Becky Trumbo. Pros: streaming gives access to practically everything, and it's easier to travel without CD or and DVD players and all the discs. Agreed.
Fair.
Cons: no stuff, and I'm a fan of stuff. No album.
I don't want no stuff.
That's hilarious.
No album stuff and DVD cover art. Love that.
Yep, I agree 100%.
Fewer commentaries. Oh my God. A hallelujah. Right?
Agree.
One of my favorite
talking
things.
About this soon.
I get all kinds of extras though on the stuff that I buy off of Apple.
I don't
do
see.
Do you?
I mean, I see some, but
not as in depth as it is on a 4K Blu-ray.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about it, but I did watch The Odyssey Making of an Epic, which is like your behind the scenes, you know, get to here's how the movie was kind of made and the quick info facts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, dang, I really missed watching this stuff because it's not always guaranteed that you have access to it if you do digital.
No,
but
it's
when
not.
You had physical, you always had the coolest shit. All the bloopers, the funny stuff, the commentary, the commentary while you get to rewatch the movie, which is an odd practice, but love it.
Well, let me finish.
Maybe we should buy a physical copy of the season 6 of The Blacklist so we could have our behind the scenes preserved.
There you go. Should. You actually probably should.
Yeah, we probably should, actually. Okay, I want to finish her thought, though. She has a good point. So, and I'm less likely to listen to a full album or watch a full movie. Most of my time finding a movie to stream goes to flipping past the choices.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's a great point.
That's a good point. No, I loved all those. Good job. That was funny.
Side note, she has a side note. This is sad or funny. My daughter's high school banned cell phones and Bluetooth headphones, so she and the other kids listen to CDs on Discmans with corded headphones. I think I love that. Yeah, I think I love that.
So they're just walking around. They have Walkmans? Like
like the old school,
in 2026? That's hilarious.
Where do you find them?
I was reading, it was front page in the USA Today. Today. But as of the day we recorded
today,
this.
Today?
Today, today.
Today, today. Today.
Okay. The day we recorded it's not today while you're listening to it. But it was a whole movement about like the whole light phone. And it's people that have light phones, people that have Walkmans. They're not like the Walkman and phones that we think about from like the 90s, but it's got very limited tech. Like you can text, you can get directions, you can take some really crappy pictures, and you can make phone calls, and that's it. No social media, no internet connection.
I can see that becoming a trend as people start to like really...
Gen Z is all over it.
Yep.
25.
But what I can't understand is why you would want crappy pictures again.
Well, so then as people have been using this, the tech is now getting better in those smaller devices. Because again, it's about a size issue. Like you need to have...
Isn't that what we
enough
did
size
for
a big
last,
enough megapixel.
Like 30 years, though?
You know...
We just did that journey. We just did this journey.
We just did it. We've been there. What is going
That's
on?
That's hilarious.
What is happening?
But there's an anti-connectedness movement, an anti-AI movement, and those are going to clash.
Yeah. Yep. I can see that.
Well, great topic, guys. I think that was really interesting conversation. And it'd be interesting to see what the world looks like in 5 or 10 years. You know? But
we're terrifying. Who knows?
Aaron might not be
alive to see it based on his heart result. No, I'm just kidding.
No, my results were great. I'm going to be fine. I'm great for somebody
plus
my age.
For your age.
So whoever it is that wants the stuff, put them in your will so they get your collection.
There you go. Becky, I'll see about putting you in there. I don't want it. Let's talk about the Odyssey. But before we get there, Michael Weatherly and Cote de Pablo reunite as fan favorite special agents Tony DiNozzo and Ziva David and NCIS Tony and Ziva. Now living in Paris and co-parenting their daughter, Tally, Tony and Ziva are trying to build a new life together until Tony's security company is suddenly attacked. Forced to flee across Europe, the family must unravel a dangerous conspiracy, stay one step ahead of their pursuers, and learn to trust each other again if they hope to survive. Don't miss the action, suspense, and long-awaited return and reunion of Tony and Ziva. You can buy NCIS Tony and Ziva Season 1 on DVD and digital now. That's right now. And also... Tony is coming back to NCIS proper this fall. Fun fact.
Woo!
Make sure you buy the DVD version.
The physical media. That goes right in line with our topic. And now it's time for the review of the Odyssey. And if you don't know what that is, it's based on Homer's epic about Odysseus's travel back from the Battle of Troy. So essentially, if you're not aware of what this is, Odysseus is the battle general, if you will, that led the Trojan horse into Troy and, you know, basically caused the end and fall of the war, won the war. And so that was a 10-year war. It took forever. They finally got the Trojan horse in. What a great idea he had. And then it's the Odyssey that he takes to get home. And across that path, it takes another close to 10 years to get back there for various reasons. He, you know, he crosses paths with Athena, with Calypso, with Sinon, with Circe. You know, there's a lot of characters that he comes across, and there's different adventures, Cyclops, and some other factors, giants. There are a lot of different obstacles that come in his way, and the entire point of him going back home is he wants to get back to his wife, Penelope, and son, Telemachus, played by Tom Holland, and his wife is Anne Hathaway. Yeah, I understand wanting to get back to Anne Hathaway, right? It all makes sense. So it's Matt Damon as Odysseus and his journey back. And this is Christopher Nolan's, of course, epic, quote-unquote, masterpiece. He's put so much work and effort into this film, trying to bring it to life. You have Robert Pattinson as Antaeus, who is basically a suitor, one of the many suitors. There are dozens of suitors that every night go to Penelope's castle, if you will, and have dinner and have a party because they're all waiting for her to say okay, to finish her burial, a shroud. And then once that's done, she will take another suitor. And so it's, can Odysseus get back to her in time? And is he the same man? And a lot of what the story is about the foils of war, reckoning with the penalty of war. Is it worth the price? Is a man ever the same? Does he deserve to get back to his family? Does he deserve a life of peace after waging a life of destruction and death and mayhem? I mean, there's a lot of underlying themes here. Now, what I will say about this is it's a very good film. It is not a masterpiece, even though I used that term earlier. I do not find it to be a masterpiece. I find it to be a very good film. It was engaging the whole time. I was not bored when it comes to the presentation. I will go and touch on a few of the aspects of it. Some that we talked about earlier in the podcast, yes, they are American accents. It is very weird at times. I mean, where Tom Holland is calling, referring to Odysseus as his dad, and it's a Greek fable. Nobody here looks Greek, so it's kind of like the Hamilton of Greek fables, if you will, because everybody is looking a little different. Some people are going to call this woke. They're never going to stop calling it woke. I just prefer to look at it based on the actors that Nolan chose and the story, the way that he chose to do it. And I kind of look at that the same way that Hamilton did, which is very much it's taking events that you know or a story that you know. I mean, yeah, some of that's a real story, but and this is a Greek fable, but still, or poem, however you want to word it. But it's really about reinterpreting that in your modern style. Yes, that does happen here. And some of the choices are inspired. Some of the choices are, I don't understand it. And some of them really just have no effect. Like a lot of noise has been made about Lupita Nyong'o as Helen of Troy. She's in it barely a blip, you know. Elliot Page is in here as a kind of an important character. It's not Achilles. It's Sinon is the character that Elliot Page plays. And I will say, I just don't think he's a strong actor. I just don't think Elliot Page was a strong presence. I think it was very miscast. I don't think the part came across strong. And a lot of the other parts are really just small parts. I think Tom Holland does, you know, as well as he could with what he has. I actually think he's a decent presence in this, not revelatory or anything like that. Anne Hathaway, I think, does her all. Matt Damon, of course, is the star that carries it forward, and he is great, although it is weird to hear the American accents in a Greek fable and hear people proclaim to be Greek that don't look or appear anything Greek that you've heard in your entire life. So it just kind of, I wouldn't say it takes you out of it because you do adapt, but it does at first, definitely. It strikes you as, well, that's a choice. You know what I mean? And The best performance for me personally by far was Robert Pattinson as Antwis. He was something remarkable. Antinous. I think I said that right. He was something remarkable. He's one of the suitors, and he's also, I would say, the resident bad guy, if you will, the villain. And because he has nefarious reasons, he wants the power. You know, he's waiting to make his move. He's also kind of a coward. You have to see this thing plays out. But there's just something about the way he plays him, man. He does such a great job. Robert Pattinson has really shocked me over the years at how strong of an actor he is. And every time he does something, I just feel like he's going to make it interesting. He's going to make it interesting. Even in The Batman, which I thought is a little bit of a slog at times because he spends half the movie walking, but he makes the walking look cool. You know what I mean? Like, he's always doing something interesting as an actor. He just really is. So I think, well, I like the movie, and I'm going to tell you right now, I give it a solid 750 out of 8. If $10 is the full price for Mission, I give it a solid 750. But here I'm going to explain why. Because for whatever reason, when it's a Christopher Nolan movie, you got to explain why you didn't rate it a 10. Because it has to be perfect, because he's Christopher Nolan. I will tell you, I saw it in IMAX. I saw it as you're supposed to see it. Looks solid. Do I think I would have missed much by going to see it in a normal presentation? Not really. I really don't think so. I feel like some of the technical marvel about filming the entire movie in IMAX, which he did, is great as a boast, but I don't think it really elevated the film in any respect. I just really don't. I personally am of the mindset that I don't think Christopher Nolan, the one thing he doesn't do very well is shoot action. It's too choppy. It's almost handheld. It's all over the place. It never feels immersive and it never feels genuine. And it's hard at times to visualize exactly what is going on in that moment. And I think that's a problem. He's had that problem throughout his career. Even in the Batman movies, I had that same issue. So it's nothing new. It's just something that is part of his direction. It's his style. Some people love it. I am not a fan of it. The other thing I will say is that what keeps it from being a masterpiece, the dialogue's clunky. Like, I was involved. Like, I'm entertained. I'm enjoying the film the entire way. I think there's some strong performances. I think some of the dialogue is clunky. And because of that, when they're giving their all in a certain moment or a performance, like, the heart isn't there. You need to feel how empty this vessel of a man has become, Odysseus, and how he's trying to recapture his own soul. And it doesn't, and it's no fault of Matt Damon's. It's the dialogue, because the dialogue it just feels too forced. And it feels very much like I'm watching acting, as opposed to I'm in the moment. I'm in it. I'm feeling it. I'm engrossed. I'm lost in this odyssey, if you will. I never got to that moment. I never had that feeling. And so, and you could probably write this off as, well, you're just complaining. I'm not. I'm telling you what keeps, I'm going to tell you what the great things are as well. My last real complaint is the score. It's weak. It's very weak. There's not much here. I feel like Christopher Nolan, one thing I will say is he is great about using a score to propel his movie, to drive his movie. I mean, Dark Knight is a perfect example. So is Oppenheimer. He's very wonderful with taking music and using it as a propellant of the story. There's pushing it forward and getting you engrossed and pushing it forward. And I don't think it works here. I don't think it's captured very well here. And I think could have been done so much better and had you more engrossed. What I did love is I did love how they represented the entire Trojan horse situation. I thought that was an interesting way to do it. You kind of get to see the Trojan horse from the outside and the inside, which I loved. I thought that was a really brilliant addition. I thought Samantha Morton as Cersei was fantastic. If you know the story, you know what I'm talking about. She was probably next to Robert Pattinson, my favorite character in the movie. I just thought that her performance was spot on. Like, she nailed it. And it's a cool moment how it tackles what that story, the story elements that are being told, and makes it work. It's really, really, because Nolan takes a very grounded approach to this entire movie. And throughout that, there are very fantastical elements the entire way. So the fact that he was trying to keep it grounded while also taking these fantastical elements was pretty impressive. The Cyclops, I thought, was a great special effect that really works. I have no idea how he shot it. I have zero idea of how he shot this. I've even watched the making of and tried to kind of understand it because he did almost everything practical. But my God, it was so well done. And it was just so creepy and effective and brutal in lots of ways. And then I just think there's a lot going on. It's kind of a little bit all over the place. There's a lot of back and forth in terms of when the story takes place. You really have to pay attention. But I will say, like, I was never taken out of it too much, but I was taken out of the heart of it. And I'm come back to the dialogue. Like, I think the dialogue just, it was too forced in some respects in certain scenes, which kind of, you know, just takes you out of it. I also want to give a kind of a shout out to John Leguizamo. I mean, he really, I thought he gave one of his best performances in years, honestly. And respect to him, you know, respect to him. There's a lot to appreciate here. I think the one beautiful thing I will say is this is the kind of movie that you have to see in a theater. If you love it, great. If you liked it, great. If you don't like it, still great. I think it's just something you should experience in a theater as opposed to watching it at home. I don't think you have to go to IMAX. I just don't. I do think this is one that's important to see on a big screen or the biggest screen you can find. It's a really just make yourself a part of the movie and the moment and the element. Because Christopher Nolan, above all things, is someone who is a filmmaker. He wants to make the best experience possible for us. And the fact that he's doing that and he's giving us an original interpretation of a story that's been told in different ways over the years, I think you should appreciate that and we should support that personally. Now, do I think it needed to cost $250 million? Probably not. I just don't. There's a lot of things where I feel like he's just doing it because he can, as opposed to he should. Shooting the whole thing in IMAX, again, I don't think was necessary. What a wasted expense. If you don't know, IMAX cameras can only hold like 3 minutes at a pop. So you have to reload that film every time to get 3 minutes of screen time. And then you can tell there's a lot of editing. But it's still mostly beautifully shot film, except for the action. I just, this is not a new thing. If you go back and listen to my other reviews, I have complained about how he shoots action quite a bit. The only exception I'll give you is The Dark Knight. I think he really, even though there are a couple spots where I'm like, I could have been better, but it's still, to me, pretty much a perfect movie. So Christopher Nolan is one that is a filmmaker you have to go and you have to see the movie in the theater. And I hope everybody that goes has a wonderful time. It's worth the trip to the cinema. We need those in the summer. I think it's awesome that he is making people excited to go back to the theater. What I will say is it just wasn't perfection. It wasn't a masterpiece. I don't even think it's better than Oppenheimer, honestly. I've heard a lot, but it's a different kind of movie too. Oppenheimer also was a 3-hour epic, and I thought the first hour was kind of a mess. If you go back and listen to that review, but the final 2/3 were fantastic. So it's, it's not the highlight of my summer. I'll be honest. I don't know if I need to rewatch it. I'm sure if it came on, I would probably enjoy it, just as much, but I don't want to say I'm disappointed, but there's definitely, I wanted more heart in it. I wanted more punch at the end of this. You know, I really wanted to feel it. And if you know the story, you know, it kind of has a Lord of the Rings-ish ending. And I really wanted to feel that. And I think I needed that punch in the gut and it doesn't come. And it's not for any real reason. I just think the dialogue's a little clunky. It's weird hearing Tom Holland yell dad instead of father or whatever they would normally say in one of these epics. But on the same token, hey, look, I just hope you enjoy it. I really do. If $10 is full price of admission, I give it $7.50. Definitely go check it out though. All right. So let's move on to what we've been watching. Anything you guys want to talk about, Troy?
I'm still in my deep dive binge of For All Mankind. I've moved on to the third season, and we are in the race to Mars.
Okay.
And so it's exactly like we'd expect. It's even though it's alternative history, it's Russia and the U.S. are in a race with a corporation in this season. So the privatization of space has now taken a foot in the early 90s, while Korea is now coming into the game.
Once you finish it, are you going to go over to Star City, the new one? That new
that was my one? That was my intent. That's why I kind of got back into it. I do kind of want to see the opposing story. What did it look like from the Russian side?
Interesting. Okay, well, keep going with it. Amanda, what about you? You haven't been here in a bit. I bet you got something.
I have watched quite a bit, but I'm going to go through just a few things. One, Love Island Season 8. Normally, I'm not into reality TV.
Oh, my God. Now that's going to be on my algorithm because it was spoken out loud.
I know. That's what happens to me. Now all of my... I'm not even on social media that much, and all it is Love Island Reels. It's crazy. But I will say it's interesting from... really just interpreting the psychological pieces that go into it, because the reason I'm bringing this up is the rules for being on that show are insane. You have no access to your own cell phone or social media. You're isolated. You're not allowed to talk about what is happening there unless the cameras are rolling. They record you while you're having sex. They encourage you to, but safe sex.
Seriously?
I swear to God, they give you condoms, apparently.
Ugh, yep. I don't like that.
There's just all of these rules. They're not allowed to eat. The genders don't eat together unless it's like during the breakfast or it's an established on-camera situation.
Just sounds creepy.
It's really, when you think about like the psychological factors of these people on the show, I can understand why people start to go a little crazy. But anyway, I wanted to call that out because if you don't know the rules, it's really intriguing and interesting. I also started, like I mentioned earlier, based on a true story. Despite the obsessive amount of dream sequences that happen in the show that makes me want to punch them in the face and poor decisions, it is still really entertaining. And Kaylee Cuoco, she is adorable. She is like a delight to watch unseen. I really do like her.
The first season is really good. Tom Bateman's really good in that show too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And then the other one I wanted to call out just because I thought it was really interesting and told me way more about the making of than I probably would have gone to seek out myself. The Odyssey Making of an Epic.
Where did you watch this at?
I think it was Netflix.
Okay.
And it's just like a short 22-minute behind the scenes thing. But because of how this movie is made, it is insanely impressive. I did not give it any credit that it had deserved just purely from the filmmaking standpoint.
It's on Peacock.
They went to, I think, 7 different locations. Almost everything was built on a location, not a set. They had one set that they made. They had to, like, in a lot of these places, use helicopters to drop the equipment down onto the location. They had to walk like 25 miles hiking up in their full costume to get to the location. They built these extravagant, essentially sets, but on the location using its real environment. All of this to make it so authentic and real and not using CGI. Like, I don't know if it's at all or very minimally, but everyone in this documentary or behind the scenes or whatever is telling you how physically different this is than any film they've worked on. And Christopher Nolan is really trying to push the needle and do something more bombastic, but also realistic. So even if you don't like the movie, even if you have feelings about casting or accents, give that a watch, because it will really put into perspective the amount of work that went into making it.
Okay, I definitely will. Just make sure you watch it on Peacock, because if you go to Netflix, it ain't going to be
Yeah,
there.
Sorry about that. I'm just very connected to my Netflix account.
I guess. I finally watched Paradise Season 2, the Sterling K. Brown show. I absolutely adored the first season. I thought it was one of the best seasons of TV I'd seen in a long time. Waited for it all, because I wanted to kind of binge it. So I was waiting for it all to release, so I finally started it. I've got one episode left, so I haven't completely finished the season.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to finish it for this conversation.
Nope, sorry, but I will tell you. So that means there's 7 episodes I've gotten through. 4 of them should have been one episode. It was just, I thought, a very meandering season for a big portion of it. There are elements to the show that I don't like, or to the season that I'm just not a fan of. I feel like there's a lot of wasted opportunity. Few too many characters that are introduced that go nowhere and really don't add anything to the story that we're being told, and way too much time outside of the bunker that doesn't add too much of anything. That doesn't mean that I don't enjoy some of the stuff in it, and it doesn't mean that I won't come back, but this is a show that's supposedly only going to be three seasons because is it Dan Fogelman is a creator? Is that his name? Mm-hmm. This Is Us guy? He has said on the record he wants this to be a three-season show, and that means there's only one more year left. And I feel like there's so much more to this whole conspiracy that could have been fleshed out and more enjoyable than what we got. So I think Troy and I don't see eye to eye on that, but you know, it felt more like he was making This Is Us in certain episodes as opposed to the show that I watched the first season. And that was frustrating to me, but I still enjoyed it overall.
I think your assessment is accurate in that it wasn't the same. Every episode wasn't a wow episode like it was in the first season. I think the second season definitely gets you to appreciate the depth of each character emotionally more when you understand what the larger game at foot really is. And it's that larger game afoot that you're going to be either really excited about at the end of this next episode, or you're going to completely hate where it went.
I'm fine with wherever they're going. It just took way too long to get there. Like the first two episodes of season two should have been one episode, period. Like there's no argument you can make to me that would make me feel otherwise. Cause I just so easily can see that working much faster, than what they did. And I get it. The guy likes to try to build emotion and likes to build atmosphere, and that's fine. I just don't think it worked here. So for me, and you know, but then, I mean, it took like three episodes before we even got back to the bunker. It was just, oh God, that was so exhausting.
See, the thing is, I wasn't even expecting to go back to the bunker in the second season.
Well, I think everyone else was. So you'd be alone in that because you don't have all those characters stuck there and then we never go back to them. That would be silly.
Well, no, I figured it was going to run like a parallel thing. It was going to be like Xavier's story for, you know, 40 minutes, you know, 30 minutes. And then it was going to be the bunker story for 30 minutes and just have those in parallel.
That's what I mean. That's going back to the bunker. They didn't do that for two episodes. It's just him and Chalene Woodley for the first two episodes. Sucked. I mean, it didn't suck. It just was drawn out. It was too drawn out. It actually did not suck. I actually like some of the dynamics, except there's one element that I really can't stand. And it is what it is. I don't want to, just in case someone's going back to it, I don't want to ruin that. But let's just say, baby, that's enough. There's enough there.
You ever heard Aaron's thoughts on The Walking Dead? Anytime you introduce children.
Yeah. Throw them to the walkers. Go ahead. Get them out of the way. That's how I feel. Yeah.
It's a very interesting concept of what he's got going on when you watch the next episode. I don't know how it's going to resolve in another season, though.
I will say I do like in one particular episode, even though I'm like, God, is this, can we get on past this or whatever? But I do like seeing Xavier, Sterling K. Brown's instincts at play, because while there is a child in regards to what's going on, it's how he handles his instincts that I thought was really, okay, so this character's not an idiot, which I appreciated. Although he's kind of an idiot, but still, not a complete idiot. I respected that. So, I'll finish it up.
And Chalene proves why she can act. She was really great.
She did great. She did a wonderful job. Yep. It was good to see her. Okay, guys. Well, that's it for this episode. We're done. We're about to go outie, and I mean way outie. We're going to go on a cruise ship. The cruise Hollywood Outsider Cruise. Who's excited? Who's ready to go to Alaska?
Me!
I'm ready to ride dog sleds and race you.
Yeah, we are. We're going to dog sled it. I think we're all doing it that, right?
Yeah.
We're doing that one day? We're all doing it together? Sweet. Mush.
Cannot wait.
So Amanda and I are going to record Aaron's run, and then as he's going along, we're going to pause at every, like, you know, 10 feet and explain his form and everything else and put it out as a YouTube episode.
I was actually thinking maybe I'll do it shirtless and I'll get out and I'll just race the dogs.
Maybe we don't do that.
Come on.
Maybe we don't do that.
Yep. I know I can do it now. I've practiced. I'm ready. No more stress.
He's already exercised his abs holding in his breath.
Oh, I'm telling you, man. I've got a great 12-pack.
Hidden by the keg.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Go see The Odyssey. Go to a theater. See some stuff. And then buy it when it comes out on Blu-ray before it goes away forever. That's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for listening. Remember, the next time you head to the theater, buy popcorn.